breath coming in short, sharp gasps. He propelled his rotund body around the stone pillars, to come to a stop before a door hidden in a dusky alcove. Panting, he stood a moment to regain his breath, then with a stubby finger, he stabbed at the bell push. Inside the apartment behind the door a bell clanged noisily. Inside the apartment the old man rested upon his bed. Sunlight streamed down upon the harbor waters. Down by the children's wading pool fond mamas gazed protectively at the end product of their amateur efforts. On the branch of a nearby tree a bird stood and sang of the joys of nesting time. The day was warm, cheerful, without a cloud in the sky. The bell clanged. The sound of the door being opened. Mutter of voices, "Can I see him a moment? It is urgent." The clatter of footsteps and one who bustled beamingly into sight around the corner. "Have you read this?" he squeaked, brandishing a copy of a very sensational French language weekly. "All about you. Libelous. Scandalous. They are going to write a book about you. Why don't you do something about it?" The light of the sun gave no more warmth. A chill came to the air and a darkness crept over all. No more was the day gladsome. From the crumpled paper came the sinister emanations of hate, the hate of jealous men. A hate that had continued throughout many years. The hatred from authors whose books were not selling so well. Hatred, jealousy, concentrated venom against one who spoke and wrote the truth. One who fidgeted with his hat and looked as though he 62. Were having second thoughts about imparting his information. "You don't like the press at all, do you?" he queried. "The French language lot seems to be writing quite a bit about you. And on TV too. Last night a book critic held up your latest book and said that he could not even read the first page of the first chapter, then he launched into a bitter attack on you personally. I wondered how he could attack so much if he had not read the book." The old man sighed. "Yes," he replied, "there is a certain very noisy minority who are trying to harm not merely me, but the special work which I am trying to do. But never mind what a critic says, he is just a person who lacks the brains to write his own book, and is jealous of anyone who does. They confuse vicious sarcasm for wit. Don't bother about them." "But there must be something in it," said one who, "or the press would not keep on so. There is no smoke without fire." The old man snorted with indignation. "Shows how little you know," he said, "or you would not make such stupid statements." For a time he lay upon his bed just thinking of the past, thinking of the events of a decade and a half ago. In those days he had been living in London, England, and since the publication of the first book there had been difficulties. An agency in Switzerland had put a wholly misleading advertisement in the Times reading, "If Lobsang Rampa will communicate with, he will hear something to his advantage." So Lobsang Rampa, scenting a trap by intuition, got an agent who was then Mr. Brooks of A.M. Heath and Company, to get in touch with the advertiser to see what it was all about. It was very informative. The agency admitted they were doing wrong but said they had instructions from an author in Germany to find out all. During those days the old man had been followed about, spied upon, and his life had been made a misery. During those days Buttercup came to live with him and Mrs. Rampa came to live as an adopted daughter. Later she was to come to Canada as an adopted daughter. But prurient-minded people immediately saw sexual perversions in such an arrangement, perversions which in actuality did not exist. The young lady was 63. Accepted as a full member of the family, as an adopted daughter, but of course people with filthy minds could not accept such a statement. The family left England, the land of persecution, and went to Ireland to the beautiful little village of Howth, near Dublin. There they made some very good friends indeed and still have those very good friends. But spurred on by a lot of lies the press mounted a campaign of hatred and incorrect statements against Lobsang Rampa, saying all sorts of things, all sorts of untrue things. The stories they invented were far more miraculous than the absolute truth which Lobsang Rampa told. One day a whole horde of beastly-minded British reporters descended upon the formerly peaceful village of Howth. They shattered the peace, they upset everyone, and one reporter in particular stole a garbage bin outside the Rampa house, ransacking it for anything he could find, and then threw it in someone else's garden, complete with all the garbage. Fantastic, ferocious articles appeared in the English press and in the German press, which was acting in close collusion with the English reporters. Lobsang Rampa was not able to do anything about the matter because he was ill in bed with severe coronary thrombosis. It was thought he would not live, but the press seemed to hope that he would not live because that would have added to the sensation. Pressmen came to the house. They yammered at the door like mindless creatures seeking only that which was evil, and not finding it, invented it. Mrs. Rampa was told they didn't want the truth. She was told that they wanted only sensation. The reporter in chief swore that he would stop the publication of any other book by Lobsang Rampa. This is the 14th. And he seemed to be beside himself with insensate fury. The whole point of the matter was, though, that because of illness, because of extreme illness almost to the point of death, Lobsang Rampa could not bring a law case for libel. And because that opportunity has been lost, the press of the world now seem able to quote whatever they like from the original articles published in England and in Germany. Apparently, because no case was made within a certain time, it cannot be made now. The British press were filthy. The German press were full. 64 of outraged indignation. But why? They worked themselves into insane fury without cause because the Rampa story is perfectly true, and the whole family has without any exception whatever affirmed that the whole thing is true. Lobsang Rampa is who he claims to be. One particular reporter printed a report saying that Mrs. Rampa had confessed. It is not so. She had nothing to confess. The story is true. Lobsang Rampa is all that he has claimed to be. He can do all the things he writes about. But because through illness he could not go to court and defend his reputation, now the press, like insensate morons, copy the original false articles and add to them out of the puff of fervid imagination. The French language newspapers seem to derive a high delight out of what they imagine was the sexual aspect of it, quite oblivious of the fact that there was no sex connected with the affair. It was all a completely innocent, completely pure association between two women and one man who lived as a hermit. The old man thought of all these things. He thought of the difficulties which had been made not merely for him but for those who would come after, those who also would try to help this troubled world. He thought of the time of another press attack. Lobsang Rampa was living in Windsor, Ontario, Canada. Unknown to him, in California, USA, a man was claiming to be T. Lobsang Rampa. He was trying to collect disciples and he was encouraging them to take mescaline and peyote, saying it was good for their psychic development, etc., etc., and that Lobsang Rampa, without any exception whatever, has said that drug taking is absolutely harmless. But Lobsang Rampa was in Windsor, Ontario, and the false Rampa was in Los Angeles. Inevitably the Los Angeles fraud was reported in the press, and there was a great commotion about it. Eventually it was proved that Lobsang Rampa was not in California and the uproar died down, but the press did not at any time publish an apology or state that a mistake had occurred. The old man turned over on his bed and rustled some papers. Quite by chance he came up with three or four letters. 65. Glancing at them his thoughts ran on, 2 or 3 months ago letters began to come in, where are my books? Where are the books you promised me? A mystified Lobsang Rampa couldn't make head or tail of it until eventually there came a letter from Colorado saying that in the high part of Colorado there was a man living in a cave announcing publicly that he was T. Lobsang Rampa. He was telling people to drink intoxicating liquors and take whatever drugs they fancied. It was good, he said. He also advised people to write to headquarters and they would be sent a free set of the Rampa books. Hence the my one which descended on Lobsang Rampa, then living in Montreal. An aroused Lobsang Rampa got in touch with the police in Colorado and applied quite a bit of pressure to the chief of police, pointing out what a bad advertisement it was for American justice if frauds could continue like this. So again another imposter was stopped. There have been many such cases. The old man thought of the time when he had had letters from airline hostesses thanking him for the promise of the books, and asking where they were. Further letters produced the information that an imposter had been aboard the plane on their flight and had made quite a lot of ostentatious publicity. The fellow had said that he was Lobsang Rampa. He was going about with a lot of flair, a lot of bounce, saying how wonderful he was, promising free books for all. But not coming up with the books. And then hostesses and others writing in reveal the whole trickery. The press never takes such things into consideration. They never consider that people, like a horde of midges, persecute those of whom they are jealous. And so it is that the press actually help those who are evil. The press, it seems, will only give publicity to bad and never to good. They do nothing to correct a wrong. It seems, the old man thought, that in my case they have really gone overboard with their hatred, with their bias. They have quoted from my books, they have quoted from articles attacking me, and when complaint has been made they said, "Oh, it's in the public domain, there is nothing you can do about it. We are within our rights." The television stations have been just as bad. There was, 466. Example, a call some time ago from a television station. They issued an invitation. "Come on television," they said, "tell us the story. Tell us the truth behind the Rampa story." So I was going to say, "Yes, the story is true, the Rampa story itself is true, it tells the whole story, nothing more and nothing less." But they would not let me give my story. They insisted that instead I should read a prepared script, and that I refused because they wanted me to say I was a fake. But I am not. I am genuine. And that is why I could not appear on television. There have been other cases like it. I have been given absolutely wonderful guarantees that I could write or say whatever I liked. "Put your own story over," they said. "Come on TV and say what you like. We won't stop you." But as soon as an offer is taken up, no, they don't want the truth. They want only that which is sensational, only that which is untrue, only that which panders to the worst emotions of mankind. Hence, throughout these books, I have attempted to get at least one message over, and one message in particular is, all that I have written is true. My books are true, they contain my own experiences. But one who was buttering around, fiddling with his feet, twiddling with his fingers. "You ought to do an article yourself, you know," he said. "Why not tell the press your side of the story? You know a man who is connected with the press, why don't you call in Mr. Telly? He'd be glad to publish just as you tell your story." "Sure, I can make the arrangement for you. I know him well. He'll come along, you'll find he is easy to get along with. Will you do that?" The old man thought about it. He thought about the article in the crummy French language newspaper, and then, reaching a sudden decision, he said, "Yes. Tell the fellow to trot out his questions. Bring him along here, I'll give him an earful." So one who smiled benignly, turned on his heel, and trotted out. The family came in, took one look at the old man's glum face, and said, "Oh dear. More trouble? Is there never any end to it? But what is truth? What is your conception of truth? Do you know truth when you see it? How would you assess the 67. Truth of a statement? Would you prefer to accept the word of a person who can demonstrate truth, or would you prefer to accept the word of people like press reporters who just want something which is sensational? But, of course, not only the press people are at fault. The public are at fault also, because just within the past few weeks I have heard of an absolutely authentic case of a man in the USA. This man had what he believed to be the right idea. He wanted to bring good to the people, so he started a newspaper devoted to good, devoted to the better aspects of the daily news, and now the paper has closed down. People do not want to hear good news, they only want to hear bad news. People do not want to hear how well a person has done, but they are interested only in the bad things. Many people are now trying to pull down Churchill and others of that immense stature because it makes them feel great to find out something about Churchill. It doesn't matter if it is something true or false, if it is repeated enough people will believe it. But let me tell you what I think about truth. In this day and age when 14-year-olds complain that they cannot communicate with even 16-year-olds, we must define our terms so that the reader can understand what the writer is trying to say. What is truth? Truth, as I see it, is a statement of facts, things which have occurred, things which are, things which are not the figments of an imagination but the quality or state of being in accordance with experience, in accordance with that which actually occurred. That is truth. Precisely. That describes my books exactly, the quality of being in accordance with experience. I experienced all that which is written in my books, wherefore it is that I write truth. Imagination, conversely, is the act or power of creating mental images of that which has never been actually experienced. My powers of cerebration are not those which would enable me to write fiction. My astrological makeup absolutely inhibits such a display of cerebral virtuosity, wherefore it is that I am compelled to write only the truth. Let me repeat myself a little, even at the risk of some ill-natured person writing to say, "You told us all that before." 68. People do write in such a manner, you know. So many people are wholly unable to understand the viewpoint of others. They have never had any experience themselves and so they just like to be vicious and, as I said before, pull everyone down to their own miserable level. Every so often there is a silly season in the press, there is not much news about, a war has ended, or the latest sex symbol has got married or has died or something else, and so bored reporters react to bored editors made irate by idleness by hatching up some scandal which really does not exist in fact. Sometimes some poor wretched schoolteacher is accused of a heinous crime and is pilloried on hearsay evidence for something of which he is quite innocent. Having been framed, accused, judged, and condemned by the vicious press of England and Germany with papers in other countries copying, I am going to give some details about it because, as you will have read in the foregoing pages, the press is still attempting to execute me as they have attempted unceasingly during the past 15 years. In my innocence I thought that every person accused of something had the right to be confronted by his accuser. I thought that every person had the right to defend himself. But, and I say this to you very seriously, the press have without exception refused to allow me to give my side of the story. They have refused to allow me any opportunity of defending myself. It is like some big bully with a high-powered public address system trying to shout down a person who can only whisper. Okay, I am whispering to you. Will you listen? I am an author who really had no intention of becoming one. In England many years ago I tried without any success at all to obtain employment. I was too old or too different, or too this or too that. I went, as you can read in my books, to employment agencies and to all manner of strange places, all without success. Then I was given a personal introduction to see an author's agent who, it was said, might have something useful. Well, the agent, no doubt with a night to profitable business, refused to give me a job, saying, "I've heard about you, write a book about your own life." I left his office in disgust and, I admit, with considerable. 69. Anger because once again I had been brought on a fool's errand. Nothing was further from my mind than book writing. I thought that it was such a silly sort of thing. Unemployment and the hunger which it caused prevailed, and eventually with extreme reluctance I wrote a true book about my life, a true book. I bared a past which I very much wanted to conceal, I bared it and wrote about it so that I could eat. But there was jealousy, The fact that I was a success aroused the ire of certain people with much money and, to put it bluntly, I was framed and attacked when through serious illness I was quite unable to defend myself. No one has ever been able to prove me a fraud, for every expert who claimed that I was such, three or more attested to my complete genuineness. I was never accused before a court of law. Instead, there have been only the sickening innuendos of the press and others, innuendos which I could not refute at the time because of coronary thrombosis. The press, the television stations, and the radio have consistently refused to give my side of the story. They have refused to print or transmit my statement that all my books are absolutely true. Instead, they keep on hatching up a rehash of the whole affair, adding lies to lies until in the end one just does not know what is what. I am reminded of the person of whom I have just told you, the man who started a good newspaper and whose venture failed because people like scandal. People like doing harm to others. The press know that if I should prove myself absolutely true, then it would not help their circulation. Only scandal, murder, rape, etc., is a useful commodity to the press. People like to say, "Oh yes, I know it's true, I read it in the press." It's a case of give a dog a bad name and hang him before he can say anything in his defense. In my case, this attitude really has caused much harm. I had hopes of being able to help Tibet by speaking before the United Nations, and, in fact, I claim that my books have helped Tibet and the cause of Tibet enormously because my remarks have made the country known, my remarks have made the strange people human. Yet, in spite of the help I could give, some of the exiled high officials in India have said unkind things about me because 70. I understand from a reputable source, they have been told to discredit me or lose the help given by certain religious organizations. It may be asked, how can these spiritual leaders, so-called, discard one of their own? But Chairman Mao and General Chiang Kai-shek are both Chinese, both try to discredit the other. Even here in Canada where I now live, Mr. Stanfield tries his utmost to discredit Mr. Trudeau, or old Tommy Douglas chips in and tries to discredit everyone. It seems to be an occupational hazard. But let us look at another case. In Northern Ireland, Christians kill each other because two sorts of Christians each think that only they are right. Both sides are Irish, both sides are Christians, both sides appear to believe in the same things, yet they fight and kill each other, and the press by inflammatory reporting add fuel to the flames. If good Christians behave like this, is it not understandable that Tibetans in India, under considerable political and religious pressure, may under odds repudiate one of their own elsewhere for the great good of the majority? My books are true. Yes, but people lose the whole point of the matter. It does not matter if I was born in Lhasa or Londonderry, the author does not matter, what the author writes, does. Have these books helped you? Have they helped anyone? Has anything been learned from them? Yes? Then they are worthwhile. You, the reader, pay a few cents or a few pence for a paperback book. That minute sum does not automatically entitle you to set up as a prosecutor, jury, judge, and executioner, yet that is what some of you are trying to do and actually loving it. But there it is. It is your choice what you believe. I say my books are true. Now I do not claim that idly, I claim it because thousands of people have written to me and told me that my books have helped them, have stopped them from committing suicide, have helped relatives who were dying, have removed fear of death, etc., etc. Do you not think that in view of all this I am entitled to a little consideration, to a little politeness instead of the ranting press always hanging around my doors? As you will read later, they eventually drove me away from Montreal. 71. I am going to quote from the Gazette of Montreal for Thursday, June 15, 1972. The headline is "Tibetans in Quebec are trying hard to keep tradition alive. Strangers in the promised land. We are going to be strangers for a long time," Lynn murmured softly over the top of her teacup. She glanced quickly at her friend, Kesang Ichhamarito, and smiled wistfully as she hunted for the right English expression. Apostrophe Kesang at 22 is a shy, reticent girl with high cheekbones and an infectious grin, but she admits to a distrust of Montreal newspapers. When we first came here, a French paper wrote a story about us which said that we didn't even know what a swimming suit was and that we went swimming in our raincoats. We may be from another country, but we are not stupid. The story did not please Lynn much either. We never even saw the reporter WHO wrote the story, she said. Where is the truth in that? The press reporter or the typed-in refugees? Yes, I certainly get to know all manner of strange things. For example, our old friend Mr. John Henderson, of whom you have heard in the past, sent me a cutting and apparently I cannot quote much from it because, well, because my publisher thinks I should possibly be infringing someone's copyright, and one has to please a publisher, hasn't one? Anyway, Mr. Henderson sent me a cutting from the Charlotte Observer dated August 26, 1971, and the headlines are startling enough. Japanese say Jesus died, buried there at age 112. The headlines go on, Jesus not crucified, documents. Japanese claim Christ sacrificed brother on the cross then fled. The article is by John Justin Smith. Apparently the fellow is a reporter on the Charlotte Observer staff, but it would be quite interesting for some of you who live in the USA to get hold of that paper and read all the details which are given there. They are very circumstantial details, very authentic reading. I have a very close friend in Japan and this young lady to whom this book is dedicated made some inquiries for me, and, well, I strongly advise you to get hold of that newspaper. 72. Because some of you will find it really interesting. But I have to remember the exhortation and injunctions of Mr. Publisher, bless his soul, and so the best thing we can do now is to answer some more questions. I have some very good ones here. Yes, that's right too, some of these questions are quite good. For example, please can you explain how art or other creative activities increase one's vibrations? And how beneficial are such vibrations? Actually everyone and everything, as I have told you before, consists of vibrations. There are negative vibrations and there are positive vibrations, and I do not know how many of you have ever played with tuning forks. But if you have two tuning forks you can hold one with its end on a table, and then you could bang on the other tuning fork to set it humming, and place that with its end on the table quite a distance away from the first tuning fork, and the first tuning fork would start humming in sympathy with the other. Get hold of a pair of tuning forks from your music store, they're cheap enough, try it and you'll find it is really quite interesting. When we get vibrations which are pleasant, it makes us vibrate more pleasantly, that is, it increases our rate of vibration and thus makes us happier, more spiritual, more perceptive. But if we get a thing which depresses our vibrations, then we get nasty-minded, lower spiritually, and it definitely stops spiritual progress. Painting, after all, is just a set of materials arranged in such a fashion that the entire vibration is such that it pleases us and increases our rate of vibration. So art, whether it be a picture or music, can increase our spirituality by raising our vibration. Remember, high vibrations are good and positive, low vibrations are negative and not always so good. The next question is a good one, and it really does fit in with the question above. A lady writes, this is a question so many people would, I believe, like some information on, fear. You have described how fear is nothing more than uncontrolled imagination struggling with willpower and that willpower will always fail in the struggle. What is the cause of fear? Let's go back to art, if we see something beautiful we app. 73. Appreciate it, we like it, we get pleasure from it. But if we see something terrible, what shall I say? A picture of devilish tortures question mark whatever it may be, if it is a terrible, beastly, horrible thing it depresses our vibrations and we get to thinking, oh, suppose that should happen to me. Then immediately, it sets up a chain reaction in our vibrationary makeup and the unpleasant vibration which we call fear feeds upon itself and produces more fear. You get the same thing sometimes when people pass a graveyard at midnight and something stirs.